1380 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. As two wildfires continue to burn in the Ruidoso, New Mexico area, there's also now the threat of flash flooding. It's due to strong thunderstorms in the area. Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued a disaster declaration for 51 counties impacted by Tropical Storm Alberto. The first named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season's brought torrential rain, strong wind, and storm surge to the southern part of the state. Well, how often do you hear this? It feels like 103 degrees. In Maine, that's what the heat index was today in Caribou, just 10 miles south of the Canadian border.
People are swimming, staying cool. They're enjoying a lot of the amenities that we have out here, the paddle boards.
Parks Director Matthew Duplessis. A collision between a semi-tractor trailer and a daycare van that was carrying 10 children in West Des Moines, Iowa, sent a number of people to the hospital. This is ABC News.
This news report is sponsored by Wisconsin Capital Management, LLC, serving their clients for 40 years. Visit wiscap.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Today is Juneteenth, which marks the day in 1865 when the last enslaved people in the United States were told they were free. The Juneteenth flag flies over the Wisconsin Capitol in Madison today until sunset. A ceremony yesterday marked the progress Black Americans have made and the challenges they still face. Donald Trump singing Milwaukee's praises at a campaign stop in Racine yesterday after calling Milwaukee a horrible city last week.
They say, oh, he doesn't like Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. I said, you got to fix the crime. We all know that. You got to make sure the election's honest. But I'm the one that picked Milwaukee.
The Milwaukee crime rate actually fell last year. The Republican National Convention is in about a month. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. After strong opposition from neighbors, a large apartment building is coming to Old Sauk Road. Now, this has been a lengthy process for Stonehouse to get rezoning approval for this project. They'll build a 138-unit apartment building, tearing down a few homes currently there. Neighbors say it'll just be too dense an area with lots of traffic. Resident Jim Baca.
The West Area Plan has stated that the method for dealing with increased traffic is to route this traffic through our neighborhood. I don't understand how a traffic plan should be routed through neighborhoods instead of keeping it on major thoroughfares.
But some say we have to add more housing in Madison, even if it's in their own backyard. Resident Paul Bailey.
I want to live in a city where my children can purchase a house when they grow up. Increasing housing supply is how we keep prices down.
Four common council members opposed the measure, but it still passed. Stonehouse says it'll be done in about 2 years. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is WMDX News.
The Brewers win with a spectacular catch. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 6-3 victory over the Angels. Down by three, the Angels' Taylor Ward took the ball deep to center field, but there was Sal Frelick to take it in on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
It's the 1-2 pitch. That ball's driven deep right center field. Frelick is there. He leaps and he makes the catch. Oh my goodness. What a play.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
It's interesting. We had a conversation in outfield before the game. I talked to two of their players. They were doing a drill. Let me ask you guys something. Is it me or we've had more robbed home runs this year than ever in the existence of the game? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, we have too. And then the game ends like this tonight.
And Willie Mays has died. In his first ever at bat, Mays hit a home run off Braves pitcher Warren Spahn. He was named to the All-Star team 24 times. Willie Mays was 93. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and lows in the low 60s. And more clouds around for tomorrow with areas of rain, highs in the upper 70s. Shower and storm chances continue for Friday and Saturday, highs mid-80s. Drying out Sunday. Right now it's 73.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and O'Dana Road. Plus, igniteglassandgifts.com.
Wisconsin Capital Management in Madison is a registered investment advisory firm and has been serving their clients for the past 40 years. The firm is focused on providing investment advisory services to its affiliated mutual funds. Their approach to investment management is designed to provide competitive performance over the entire business cycle. Their clients rely on them to manage their assets through the fluctuations of market cycles, and they strive to outperform over the long term. For information, visit wiscap.com.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, Todd Albaugh here. Join us next time as we come back from Juneteenth in Baraboo and back in the studio to discuss news headlines and so much more. Be there.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Of course it is. Well, maybe it's not. It's just Tim. Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, Busted Pencils, Special Night, Educated Educators Talking Education, amplifying the voices of educators. It's just Teacher Hallie in the house, Teacher Joanna, and Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Well, you know, occasionally, sometimes, there are other things that come up, and when that happens, that's what's great about having a team of four, typically on a Wednesday, is that we can still show up and really kick some, you know, butt. That would be butt, not the other thing. Teacher Hallie, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for it to be just the two of us. Let's go. We can still riff.
Hey,
right?
I think we can. I mean, typically the whole idea is that people are going like, oh my God, who's going to shut the two of them up?
Well, I'll shut you up and you shut me up.
Okay. We'll go back and forth. You know what though, Teacher Hallie, just a reminder, you know, the Busted Pencils, it's sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its crappy voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. I didn't know if you'd forgotten that, Hallie.
No, thank you for the reminder.
Okay. I just think so. And Sherry from Horicon, thank you so much for saying hi in the text all the time. Good evening, boys and girls. Well, yeah, or boy and girls, or yeah, you know, however, us, them, everybody here. Oh, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. The number is 855-752-4842. Special Educators Amplified. We've got some topics here. Teacher Hallie, but today, you know, first of all, it is a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Juneteenth, right?
Yep. Happy Juneteenth.
Happy Juneteenth. Now, we're going to pose a question to the listeners out there, yeah, or anybody. But first of all, you know, we're just saying Juneteenth celebration marking the day in Texas when slaves were read that they were free. You know, so this holiday, it's a holiday, and it is, as Anya pointed out before the show started, you know, banks are closed on Juneteenth. So it's a holiday. The question, though, in today's world that we currently occupy,
2024.
Oh, sad. If school were in session, would the public schools be acknowledging Juneteenth as a holiday? Would we be teaching the students about the history of Juneteenth? Or would we find us all wrapped up in turmoil because, you know, Juneteenth is just one of those critical race theory topics that is meant to divide us and split us up, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole? I don't know. That's a question. You kind of posed that this morning thinking about that. So if school were in session right now, would there be the holiday? I think the question, that answer is probably, yeah, it would still be there. The thing that we're more kind of intrigued or possibly throwing out to the listener for you to call in and let us know is that in 2024, with all of the attacks on what are called critical race theory, the truth, divisive concepts, would Juneteenth be framed as one of those divisive concepts? And would we be having discussions about whether we should even be talking about it? I think it's a powerful question.
Oh, I do too. I mean, and I have theories myself. Mm-hmm. I think it, you know, because Wisconsin is a battleground state, I think it definitely depends on where you live, like what county you live in, how red or blue it is. You know what I mean? And how, like, and then I also think, like, so if you're in more of a blue county, I would say, yes, they'll be talking about it. There's probably an assembly or a celebration or an honoring that like the whole district does.
Right.
I feel like in a red county, it's like crickets and or dependent on the teacher. You know?
Yeah.
But I won't even put it just on teachers, because what I see often living in a red county is that we have school boards now that are very much running with their power and like using it like, I don't even know, like that, like the power is all theirs. And I think that they're very good at inciting fear in professionals.
I think that when you hit on that, the question of how many teachers would feel threatened.
Right.
With the idea of going, what do I do today on Juneteenth? Can I teach this? I've now been a teacher for the past, let's just imagine, you know, 10 years, 15 years. But in the last 3 years, I have been in classrooms and have heard school board meetings and have read news articles. And I'm not so sure I want to go down in that direction, because who knows if I might not offend somebody. And so it's that chilling effect.
Well, who knows if I'll get quote unquote caught.
Right.
And then let go.
Yeah. Wow. Right away. Caller Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark's on the line. What's happening, Mark?
Yeah, thanks. And talking about the Civil War, it just brings back to mind, and this is going back some 50 years ago now, when I was in 11th grade, and my teacher, Bernie Tomczak, lectured on the Civil War. I particularly remember the lecture when he talked about the Battle of Shiloh and the peach blossoms dropping on the dead and wounded during the Battle of Shiloh. I mean, it's just sad that, you know, American history is being forgotten, and they're hesitant to teach about it. And certainly, you know, Juneteenth, it should be a teachable moment, because it took that long, even though it's, they probably were full aware in Galveston. The officials were probably fully aware in Galveston of the fact that the South had lost and the Emancipation Proclamation had been made. They chose to do that until the Federals actually arrived to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, it is just, and that should be recognized as well, because there's, you know, that it's, and the fact of the matter is, as soon as Jim Crow ended. I mean, as soon as Reconstruction ended, Jim Crow replaced it. Right. And that's something that is not taught, and Jim Crow is still with us, and its legacy is still with us.
Yep. I think, Mark, you know, it's one of those, too. You make me think about this, and Teacher Hallie, because there's so many ways that this comes up, because you hear Mark going like, there's so much history, you know, it's not just Juneteenth. It's like, why Juneteenth? Why do we celebrate? Yep. What's the history? What was the intentionality of keeping people suppressed to even knowing that fact, that it took that long for that message to get delivered? Was there an intentionality to keep people enslaved as long as they could? You know, and that's part of the history. It's part of the story. And I think that's where you would start to find people saying, you know what? We can have Juneteenth. We can have a parade. We can have a picnic. Yep. But we're not talking about the facts, though, because those facts make me uncomfortable. And if you're a teacher out there inflicting uncomfort on people, watch out, because the history police are going to come for you. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educators Amplified, Teacher Hallie in the house. 855-752-4842 is the number. If you want to join us, just like Mark did. Mark, really appreciate your call.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, Anya, let's jump in right away. You know, you volunteered there.
I guess,
Go for it.
So I was just sort of sitting here listening to this, and I think it's important, right? The difference between the Emancipation Proclamation, here's Abraham Lincoln saying, we're going to free the slaves, versus that news finally getting, you know, because until the news gets to these folks, unless mm-hmm. they all know about it and subsequently choose to walk off of the where they're being kept and they could be subjected to violence, right? The Emancipation Proclamation means nothing until these folks mm-hmm. get to leave. So this is kind of similar in a way to why there's International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but then there's also Yom HaShoah. And International Holocaust I can't get my words out today. International Holocaust Remembrance Day falls on the day actually that the Soviet military basically got to Auschwitz to liberate it, whereas mm-hmm. Yom HaShoah is like is more set on the day that we actually see like prisoners, incarcerated individuals of the Holocaust getting out and being able to talk about their liberation. The difference between the story of the liberator, the soldier, or the president who does the thing and gets there with the guns and the military versus, okay, and the folks, the people who needed to be freed because someone decided to make them unfree, when is their day? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar. It's like, I don't want to equate things to be the same.
No.
Similar.
Well, what's similar on this one, the way we're talking about this, is the richness that comes around these stories, the history, and how you can relate, you know, going like, well, this happened and then this, and you make, you know, that's what you do. And I know, you know, Johnny, you know, past social studies teachers, both of us, I mean, this is the type of things you want to engage students in constantly, is comparison. How is this like this? How is mm-hmm. this not like this? Mm-hmm. How are they, you know, and let's talk about it. And so, yeah, think mm-hmm. about that. We're putting forth the question then here today on Juneteenth, would there, if school were in session, would there be these critical analysis, these discussions based around the history, or would it be potentially in today, 2024, kind of just churned into, you know, hey, it's another holiday. It's another day for a parade or for us to, you know, listen to African drumming music and we're going to walk around. But other than that, though, we're not going to dare come close. Teacher Hallie.
Yeah, it makes me think about like, right, it's what we're faced now as educators is this, like, we're either allowed to be the professional, like where we can give the critical thinking and help, you know, encourage students to think and inquire on all of this stuff, right? Even when Anya was talking, like, I got chills. Like, I love thinking like that. Kids just eat that up, right? Because it's making them think. Versus, well, what fun fact can I just give about Juneteenth?
Right.
You know, like, it's really stripping away the professionalism when we have all this.
That's the question. That's the question we're asking with Educators Amplified tonight. You know, Juneteenth, if school were in session, would we be teaching it or would we be just kind of having a little bit of a fun day? Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, 855-752-4842. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and O'Dana Road. Plus, IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now on the WMDX website at mad.radio. Your news just for the Madison area. I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Just the two of us, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, 855-752-4842. Oh, well, you know, hey, we said
you can make anything into a rock song.
Hey, best music anywhere. We say it all the time. Busted Pencils, you know, you're going to get some type of surprise. Juneteenth, though, question, you know, if today, well, you know, if we were still school in session, what would the students, the teachers, the schools, the school districts be doing around this day? And we kind of framed it as this potentially problematic in 2024 because there's a story here that might make some people uncomfortable. You know, so is it Emancipation Day? Is it Freedom Day? These are questions right away, right? That somebody could go, well, wait a minute. No, you know, we can have hot dogs. I'll even allow the drumming African drummers to come in and do a little celebration, but we are not going to be talking about the specifics of Juneteenth. Why did it take so long for the message to get to the slaves? Why did it take so long for us to actually have a holiday around Juneteenth? Because those topics, if we start getting into those types of discussions, Teacher Hallie, somebody might be offended.
Yeah, and I think it's what's wild to me is that, like, it's got to be deeper than uncomfortable and offended. You know what I mean? Like, for people to want to get in positions of power and to, like, eliminate this type of conversation, this type of critical thinking, this type of conversation is just so deep to me. Like, it is to me, like, it's just an attack on, like, the profession of education and, like, really an attack on, like, the children's minds and, like, the capacities of, like, where you could go with their minds. Because, again, like I said, I just keep sitting here thinking about how this has so much to do with taking away the autonomy of teachers. And people will be like, well, I don't want my teacher to have autonomy. You know, I'm like, well, why not? Because they're professionals. No. You know, like, we should want them to be able to take a conversation and route it wherever it needs to go. It actually makes me think about a shout out to a teacher I won't name because I think this was fear inducing, but my child's second grade teacher, and it was around Martin Luther King Day. So related, but not related, but essentially a conversation about racism came up, you know, with 7 and 8 year olds. Okay. Right. And students in the class shared about how they had experienced racism in their life. And so my daughter came home, who is white, and she was just, like, beside herself, you know, like, she's very empathic, where she's just like, why would people do that? That is awful, Mom, you know? And then she's like, I was crying in class. But to me, I was like, what an amazing conversation. Mm-hmm. As I'm listening to my I don't remember if she was 7 or 8 at the time, my 8-year-old be able to tell me about what racism is in a very like developmentally appropriate 8-year-old way. Mm-hmm. I was like, dang, that teacher knows how to navigate this conversation. So just being who I am, I emailed her being like, thank you so much. Like, this is why I send my children to public school. Those type of conversations that just come up that you can navigate professionally is amazing. Mm. And her response back to me was like, do you mind sending this or like forwarding it on to the principal? Because I'm getting like, my principal is like, basically telling me I need to send an apology to all the parents, a clarification about why I talked about it, because she's so scared that the school board will find out and then they'll be upset. You know, so that teacher was like mortified,
right?
And like walking away being scared versus, and then I did find out later from talking to other parents and then encouraging them like, email her, you know, but it was, and they were excited that the conversation happened. But I'm just like, this is the environment that teachers are teaching in of like. Well,
so imagine, right. Imagine then today it's Juneteenth, if we were in school, and I was saying when you're sitting there and what you described though with your daughter in that though is exactly I can see the other parent going, how dare you send my daughter home in tears, feeling bad about being white? What in the heck are you doing with? Right. No,
I'm interrupting you because what's wild to me is that like, I get our, I think we're so conditioned now to think about like the quote unquote other parent, but I'm telling you that that class of, you know, random class of probably 30 second graders, there weren't parents that were like, lock her up, you know, like nobody complained.
Right.
You know, so that's where I just get like, why does our brain go to like, but we need to be careful about the what if situation of the one parent that might say something or might find out? You know, I'm like, it's taking away the professionalism and a true public education for kids.
And that is what you're explaining, though, is that's the reality of today is that how much. I know how much can be stifled without actually any harm being done or anything like that. Yes. Right. You know, it's Educators Amplified Night, Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slecker and Anya on the boards. Another text from Sherry from Oregon. It needs to be uncomfortable, but told right on. I mean, that's the reality here. We got to do that. And just think about that, you know, because the reality of the potential that none of the parents were associated with you and your daughter and all that, like you're all fine with that, but it doesn't matter anymore because there is a story out there of a teacher who, you know, got put into the wet dungeon with the rats and made to hang out there for days as their punishment for daring to make somebody. But the story gets out that this did happen, right? And so then the anxiety response on that then is to catastrophize way above and beyond the reality that will typically go. And then you stifle yourself. And people, you know, people say, well, what's the problem? You don't, if it's true, you don't have, it's like, no, you understand this silences people very powerfully without actually doing any type of harm. I remember that I would my first couple of years teaching have some, you know, it's like, you're going to get in trouble, Tim. You're going to get in trouble. And I kept wondering, I'm like, how do you know that? Where is the evidence that trouble has occurred? And it must have been so horrible because we have no evidence of anybody having ever gotten in trouble. But the fear of getting in trouble has created such a backlash that people go, hey, you know, and I would even say, I'm like, when did this person get in trouble? What happened that was so horrific that the rest of you now have decided that we're going to actually warn people about what happens when they get in trouble? Juneteenth, Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, Fully Leaded Education Talk, all those things, Educated Educators Talking Education, 855-752-4842. Do a little bit more Juneteenth, but hey, the other thing though, too, If you're an administrator out there and you're hiring a consultant, we want to talk to you when we get back.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin is getting about $16 million in a nationwide settlement with Johnson & Johnson over harmful baby powder. State prosecutors around the country say the company knew the talc in its baby powder could cause cancer. Attorney General Josh Call did not say exactly how the money will be used. The idea that non-citizens get to vote for president is not only untrue, but good government groups say falsehoods like that plant dangerous seeds of doubt about American elections.
Non-citizens are already not legally allowed to vote in federal elections. This has been the case through American history, and it was codified into American law in 1996.
David Becker is with the Center for Election Innovation and Research. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Local police are asking people not to use gel blaster guns in public. If you've never seen one, they're sort of like Nerf guns, but instead of foam, they shoot these small gel pellets. They can cause welts if you're hit with them. Sun Prairie police say they're responding to more and more incidents where these gel blaster guns are used in fights, sometimes even hurting passersby, and using them is against Sun Prairie city ordinances. They're widely available online. The department asks parents to talk to their kids about them and not buy them as toys for their children. And it's a tough week for families who rely on the River Food Pantry. They had to close the pantry yesterday. Their air conditioning broke, and it was just too hot to operate without it, especially when you're talking about storing fresh food. Today, they're closed again to mark Juneteenth. They hope to open again with restored air conditioning tomorrow. The River is the area's busiest food pantry. They feed over 2,500 people every week. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is WMDX News.
I'm Pete with a 60-second showbiz beat. Woody Harrelson was in a motorcycle accident recently while driving to Conan O'Brien's podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, where he was to appear with Ted Danson. O'Brien addressed the bandage on Harrelson's hand. During the broadcast, Harrelson told O'Brien about his accident and said it's a good thing he wore a helmet because he flew over his handlebars and hit his head when he crashed into a Tesla. Instead of going to an actual doctor, Woody drove to the set where pretend Dr. Becker bandaged him up. Throughout the interview, listeners learned that hazing was alive and well on the set of Cheers. Danson says most of the actors were in their 30s, and young Buck Harrelson was 24 when he joined the cast. In an effort to show Harrelson the pecking order, Danson said he and his castmates tried to kick Harrelson's butt, first with physical activity, but Harrelson beat them all in basketball, leg wrestling, and arm wrestling. When they switched to more cerebral methods, Harrelson beat them at chess, too. Who would have thought a humble guy from Indiana could outsmart Hollywood actors? For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight with scattered showers and lows in the low 60s. And more clouds around for tomorrow with areas of rain, highs in the upper 70s. Shower and storm chances continue for Friday and Saturday, highs mid-80s. Drying out Sunday. Right now it's 73.
When you're having computer problems, you need a company you trust to get things working again, quickly and affordably. Madison Computer Works has been doing that for business and residential customers for decades. Our computer care plans take away the hassle of being without your computer or needing to bring it in for repair. Starting at only $10 a month, our local and friendly techs provide remote help and can fix most problems in just minutes. Call 608-231-8000 and sign up today. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go, shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in to a very special Devil's Advocates radio show this Thursday. We'll be both stirring the pot and cooking with gas. Friday Eve, tune in Devils.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 3 to 6.
No one can be. If every page was torn from the magazine, would you still talk to me, media machine?
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Wednesday, educators amplified in the house. Teacher Hallie. Teacher Joanna, you know, and Johnny tonight. Other things have come up, and that is, you know, again, family first all the time. Teacher Hallie, though, you know, Juneteenth today, we kind of posed the beginning of the show to kind of, you know, if school were in session today, you know, what would be happening in schools? Would there be teaching about Juneteenth, about the history, about why it took so long for the message to get to those slaves in Texas? Would we be engaging, or would it be simply in today, 2024? Hey, you know what? I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, so we're just going to have hot dogs and announce that it's a holiday.
Yep. I mean, gosh, it bothers me that that's like how it, you know, like how things roll, you know. I also think about, like, I always think about, because we're in this type of environment right now, like, is there anyone that's there to like defend or be like, nope, this is what we should be doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's very based on like, here's what we should do, here's what we shouldn't do, versus like just what's felt mentally appropriate. Like, is anyone going to come out here and try to like defend that, you know? And to me, I could be like, oh, that could be like an administrator's role to, you know, to preserve the autonomy or preserve the professionalism of the educators in the classroom. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they view that as their role or not. You know,
well, that's a whole other question that you bring up there, too. What does an administrator believe their role is in these situations? Mm-hmm. You know, lots of administrators, and let's use that word, and some people, you mean the leadership? Potentially administrators, yeah, are sometimes by default the leaders. Right. However, if you were a leader in this situation, I'm pretty sure you would, yeah, advocate for the autonomy. Potentially, though, this is one of those situations where would district administration want to consult an outside source to potentially give them guidance?
Yeah. I mean, so this is what's crazy about a school, is that like the hierarchy is stacked, right? Where it's like teachers at, well, students at the bottom, then teachers, then building administration, then district administration, you know, and district administration more and more. I used to think like superintendent was at the top, but I'm seeing more and more with these cultures of like fear, essentially, that they're like, kind of superintendents are kind of like not lowering themselves very low, but kind of being like, we work with the cabinet of the pupil services director and the athletic director and the, I made up this title, director, you know, so that it's like this little team of people. So no one can say like, I said it.
Yeah.
And then they can be like, oh, we hired this consultant who said dot, dot, dot. Right. And so what's really just has been very interesting to me as an educator is seeing how many consultants, like the superintendent gets to hire a consultant, the pupil services director gets to hire a consultant, the curriculum and instruction director gets to hire a consultant. You know, like we have consultants for all of our quote unquote leaders. And what is that about?
When's the last time you as a teacher got to hire a consultant?
Sometimes I'll be like, I don't need a consultant.
No, I know. I just had to throw that out there.
But like,
I,
lo-
I love Anya's comment. Where she put in there.
I was wondering. Yeah, does someone get to be the director of making up titles if there's all these titles going around? And if there is, who is their consultant? And where do they go for their info?
Right. I mean, schools are so successfully marketed to that, you know, Google has a consultant, you know, like for an example, but also just like, oh, I'm a consultant of, are you having trouble with how to talk with your educators about special education? I'm a consultant for that. Oh, are you having difficulties with your financials in your district? Oh, I'm a consultant for that.
Okay, but you're making me think, though, on this now, too, about that, because I start to wonder about, do you need a consultant, or shouldn't that be your job responsibility, and shouldn't you have the professional authority and autonomy to be making those types of decisions? And then, you know, we're talking about school budgets, you know, where the heck does all this money come from for the consultants? Never, never, never do I hear that there's not enough money for the consultant. There's not enough money for, you know, the school band. There's not enough money for the field trip. There's not enough money for food. There's not enough money for teacher raises. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the consultant class, and I will say I have worked as a consultant though myself, and so I'm But asking the question, though, at what point should you be the one responsible for the work, have the authority and have the leadership skills to actually enact tough decisions that you shouldn't need a consultant? And if you need a consultant, is that really just evidence you're not really good?
I don't know. I would love if a district administrator or even a building administrator called in and gave us perspective on, like, one, have you ever had a consultant? Two, what do you think that your role is in all of this? Like, you know, I just, because right from my lens, I'm like, we hire a superintendent at, you know, like $150,000 plus. And I think that was really lowballing it. And then how much is a consultant, you know, that like you, that they hire in for themselves, but yet all I ever hear is an educator, like the most expensive line items in the budget is educators, you know? So like, that's why we can never pay all the educators, because they're so expensive. And I would love to like proportion it out of like, if there's X number of people in your district office, how much of your funding, what percentage goes to that and their consultants versus, you know, whatever. There's got to be, you know, I'm sure unions have done it and, you know, figured it out. But it's actually terrifying, you know, that like when schools have budget issues, that what gets cut is things that affect students versus things that affect one superintendent and their consultant or whatever.
Well, you think about that, you know, how do we make budget decisions? And some of those things, it's like, well, you know, we can do away with funding the kindergarten field trip this year. And you're like, well, why are we making that decision? Well, I can't cut my consultant. You know, and again, like you frame this, Teacher Hallie, by too saying, you know, and if you are a district administrator out there and you're listening to us right now, you know, give us a call, 855-752-4842. either, you know, validate, verify what we're talking about, challenge us on it, because we're really, you know, we're asking these questions because, as Teacher Hallie points out, you know, it always seems like, particularly when it comes down to the budget. And if the budget's tight, which, hey, guess what? It's a public school. I don't know that there hasn't ever been anything but a tight budget. When you make those decisions, and this is a question that, you know, I kind of posed before the show, are the consultants' salaries should they be disclosed as part of the financial situation that a school is in? And if we did know that, would we know, would we say, well, you know what? It's not that much money. Yeah, I guess we should cut the kindergarten field trip. I mean, how are these decisions made? So lots of issues coming up here as we bring this, you know, bring this forward. Lots of different ways to throw it. But, you know, are you an administrator? Do you need a consultant? And if you do need a consultant, is that really an indication that you're not that qualified that you actually have to hire a consultant? Or is it an indicator that you're not that great of a leader and you just want to hire somebody who can tell you that here's what you need to say, and then you can then go to the masses or the team and say, the consultant said? Or even this possibility of going, it's just like, you know, how do we make decisions around making important declarations going all the way back to the Juneteenth? Yeah, mm-hmm. I could see this situation being, you know, a district school, an administrator, a group of leaders, the curriculum director, the director of making up titles, all getting together and going, you know what? You know how we could solve this problem? We'd hire a consultant.
Yeah, I can see, you know, from my experience in the current climate and culture that we're in, it is a lot of like people in the quote unquote leadership roles pointing to others or pointing to the team of like, so instead of it being like, I individually made this decision, if we hire consultants or work as a team or whatever, we can say things like, oh, well, the consultant recommended this, mm-hmm. you know, like it almost gives that like pass or mm-hmm. that like, you can't ever pin anybody down to get to the root of the issue. And I think that's why we're just, these issues just aren't going away and we're just taking Band-Aids to try to cover things up. Mm. Or like when teachers are like, I'd love to do something on Juneteenth that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. It turns into like, well, let me ask X, Y, or Z, or the team decided this, or the consultant sent out the communication and that's what we're doing in our district. You know, it just allows this like, I guess, land of zero responsibility or zero like ownership or like zero, like I can just like wipe my hands.
That's why now, you pay good money for the ability to offload the decision-making. That's what's happening in a lot of these situations.
It feels like.
Yeah. You know, and I'll come back and say, I have worked and I still do some work as a consultant. So anybody who's out there listening going, why the heck is Tim? I'm like, I hire myself in situations to come in and, you know, it's more around a group and putting together strategic planning and the idea. And so, you know, I see places where I understand why you do have consultants. But I can point out, I know, but I can point out though what you just said though, Hallie, which is, you know what? A lot of times we hire consultants to make the hard decisions so that we don't have to be the ones to deliver the bad news. And that I'm framing that. So, you know, if you're listening out there and you know the situation I'm describing, 855-752-4842, you know, you've been part of consultanted. There, I just made up that word, consultanted, you know, so, you know, and possibly even to the point where you find yourself being told by your boss, hey, sorry, but the consultant said, and this is the decision we're making. And boy, how does that feel to be told by somebody who's a leader? And I say leader, and I'm not really sure you're a leader when you offload decision making to consultants. Hallie, before we break, I see you got something.
This just sounds like a really crazy ball of hierarchy and bureaucracy to me. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about power with versus power over. If we had a power with structure, things could be so much better.
The old distributed leadership, my goodness, sharing decision making. Right. When you were talking about a team, though, and in fact, when we come back, I want to throw that out there because guess what? You do have qualified people to make these decisions. We're going to talk about them when we get back. More Busted Pencils next.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house. Teacher Hallie, Dr. Tim Slicker, Anya. Yeah, the three of us, we're hanging out on Juneteenth, talking about, yeah, what will we do on Juneteenth if we were in school? And then the possibility of, well, this would be a decision we would turn over to a consultant to make. And Hallie, you know, you pointed out to me one of the things that I think, and I've seen this, the use of consultants to essentially keep hierarchy in place. Mm-hmm. Because you were talking about a team, right? And so I'm imagining a school, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining three kindergarten teachers, three first grade teachers, three second grade teachers, a speech pathologist, a special education coordinator, all the way up through fifth grade. That's a team of really smart people who are all qualified to be an educator, to be a decision maker. Why don't we ask you guys to do this, and why do we offload this to a consultant? And I'm posing that question because, is it because we don't want to give you the autonomy to be decision makers?
I mean, that's how I interpret it. Honestly. But like, I'm open, you know. Funny enough, I kept using the word team, and now I'm going to correct myself, because the word I always am told in education for what I would define as a team, but the word that's always used for district admin, those roles that work together, is the cabinet.
Oh, the cabinet.
The cabinet made this decision, which to me, I'm like, why don't they just say team? Like, it's a whole nother example to me, I guess, of the whole like, but we are the cabinet.
Well, but it creates separation, like you just said, because it's the cabinet. It's the executive group. It's it's the president's advisory council.
Yes.
And you're going, well, wait, why does the president have an advisory council that doesn't include any of us who are living it every day?
Right.
Right.
You know, this hierarchy system has got to go.
you're like, well, how do I get on the advisory council? It's like, well, you don't. If you're a teacher, if you're actually, if you're part of the team, you don't get to be part of the decision making. We hire the decision making out to the group that is the authority. Oh my God, it gets so messy. Yes. Sounds like we're having a little bit of a conversation about what does it mean to be a leader? What does it mean to be an administrator? I think those are very, very, very different. And I will frame it this way by saying leaders should have some good administrative skills, but being an administrator does not make you a leader. And I see way too many administrators, and I'm saying across multiple different occupations, different categories, not just in schools, but that whole idea of I'm now an administrator. And the assumption is that you've been appointed a leader. And it's like, sorry, to me, leadership is earned.
Well, and I think it has to do too with like values or like philosophy. Of like, is it just like, because I am an administrator, quote unquote, at the top, I am named the leader versus my, how I treat, you know, everybody within the school or, you know, corporation or whatever, like how I operate, how, you know, we choose to work together. Is that more what defines someone having leadership skills?
Now, and I'm posing it though to really, you know,
yeah.
I obviously people are going, Tim, you obviously have an opinion on this. I do. I think that they're, I do. I've just because I've been, you know, guess what? I now get to potentially cite my age as the potential that I have some thoughts and wisdom and seen some things. And a lot of high up administrators, as you point out, Dieter Hallie.
Okay.
Over my 30 plus years of being in multiple places and multiple things, is that they're not always in any way, and some of them are horrible leaders. It is just because of the position that they are assumed a leader, and realizing there's a huge difference between being in charge and at the top and being a leader. And maybe this is even to that question you start going, why is it that you might have a leader who doesn't need a consultant? I don't know.
Right. And I also think about then, I mean, what we haven't talked about, but I'll bring back full circle because I think it has to do with our Juneteenth conversation too, about also part of this hierarchy in schools is a school board. And like, do we consider school board members leaders? Do we consider them more just a position of power? And like, depending on who's there, what they do. I mean, I know school boards get to hire consultants too, you know,
right?
Or even legal, you know? So like, it's just, I mean, it's a very layered, like, issues within education related to this concept of leadership.
Oh, and you think about it though too. We got here by talking about Juneteenth.
Right.
If we were, you know, fully in a school
in
right now in session, if we were in session, would we be even celebrating Juneteenth? Oh, and we got a text from Jim in Appleton. Different terms. The difference between a diplomat and a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about, you know, a leader versus an administrator, a diplomat versus a bureaucrat. And there's a connotation that one's better than the other people. Yes, there is a connotation that one is preferable above the other. And I'm okay with that because I've now seen bureaucrats and administrators that are really horrible at being diplomatic and providing a model of leadership. Sorry, you know, that's just the reality. And, you know, is that the reason though, sometimes too, if you're hiring a consultant, is it just because you yourself don't have the skill set? I think that's one issue. Or is it also because the skill set you don't have really is leadership? And so therefore you're hiring somebody to make the hard decisions where a real leader would make those hard decisions. When it comes to Juneteenth, a real leader, if we were in school, we would be doing this. Busted pencils, Teacher Hallie, man, Educators Amplified. Love it. All right, everybody. Have a great night. See y'all tomorrow. Thanks, Teacher Hallie.
Bye. Thank you.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Maggie Dawn.
Days 12 and 13 of Biden's top 100 will be touching upon the residential tax credit, leasing for offshore wind energy, biofuels, and clean construction.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons at 2.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Mad Radio. WMDX 1580 AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.